Fed interest rates held steady. What officials said impacting markets. Today, we have more answers for you coming up on Business Matters. Good afternoon, and thank you very much for joining me here today. I'm your host, Don Ma. Our top story today, U.S. stocks closed mixed today after the Fed left its key interest rate unchanged. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ ended lower, while the Dow notched a modest gain here. The Fed's decision, as expected, they indicated that its next move will probably to cut rates. Now, here's a bit more on the details here. The Federal Open Markets Committee concluded its two-day monetary policy meeting. All of the members agreed, actually, to hold rates steady, which stands now at 5.25% to 5.50%. Now, at the conference, Chair Powell said that the central bank remains focused on bringing inflation back to its 2% target. He also dismissed the notion of an imminent rate hike. So here with me now live to digest the Fed's interest rate decision and Chair Powell's comments is the chief strategist at Mill Street Research, Sam Burns. Sam, how's it going?
Hi, Don. It's going well. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Sam. So, you know, what stood out to you today? Help us parse through what Powell said.
I think today's Fed meeting was one of those not as bad as people had been concerned it might be. I think some people, you know, in the last few days had been concerned that the Fed would come out more hawkish, that they would be more concerned about the slightly higher than expected inflation readings we saw during the first quarter of the year, and that they would potentially even put rate hikes back on the table. But the statement and the press conference by Jay Powell both indicated that they were not considering any rate hikes, that they were not particularly worried about the inflation data, that it really is merely a pause or sort of delay in the potential rate cuts that will come later in the year rather than a reversal or a reason to really change policy. So it sounds like they're perfectly happy to kind of keep rates and keep policy where it is now. And then they took a step back on their quantitative tightening or their balance sheet runoff. That they're slowing that down some now, which the bond market seemed to like a little bit. So I think overall it was as expected or a little better than expected, but not as bad as some people had feared.
Well said here, Sam. But if you were to be put a label on what Powell's remarks looked like, would you say it's leaning towards hawkish or dovish?
I would say, if anything, it was a little on the dovish side. Like I say, they're keeping rates neutral for now, and I think we'll probably for a little while longer. So it's not a big move either way, but it's consistent with what several of the Fed officials have said, which is to kind of keep rates where they are until we get greater confidence, in their words, that inflation is going to head back to the 2% target. And they didn't get that in the first quarter, but they expect that they will get it later in the year as we go forward. So I would consider it a little bit more dovish than people had been concerned about, but not extreme either way.
So Powell mentioned today about its balance sheet drawdown. Are there any liquidity issues in the system?
Not so far. I think the banking system and the credit markets and everything are still functioning pretty well. I think the Fed is a little bit nervous about running their balance sheet down too far too fast. Because they did do that a number of years ago, back in 2017, 2018. And at some point, the banking system reserves and things got a little too low and started to cause problems. So I think they're conscious of trying to avoid that. And by slowing down the pace of their balance sheet contraction, they give themselves kind of more latitude, more runway to avoid having to make big changes in the future if things do get a little bit tighter on reserves. So I think it's more of a precautionary step than anything else.
So, it seems like markets didn't complain too much about what they got from the Fed, right? Can you talk a little bit more about the market's reaction?
Yeah, now today I think we saw that the market was somewhat relieved after the Fed meeting. And the bond market actually did, rally a little bit after the meeting and held that into the close. So the bond investors who are most sensitive to the Fed kind of had a relatively, positive view of it. The stock market kind of rallied and then sold off a bit towards the end of the day. But I think a lot of that was related to the tech sector, and particularly the semiconductor stocks, which are really not trading based on the Fed. They're trading based on their own news. There's concerns about valuations and some of the forecasts that some of the semiconductor stocks have issued recently. So I think that's more of a specific thing to that particular industry that's done extremely well until recently, and not really related to the Fed. So I think overall, the response from the stock market to the Fed was, you know, kind of mixed to slightly positive, but that the parts of the tech sector got hit for their own reasons, unrelated to the Fed, and the bond market seemed to be happy enough with it.
Well, all right, Sam, thank you very much for coming on today. Great insight. Hope to talk to you soon.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So, you know, we're in the heart of earnings season right now, and I actually selected a few of them just to go through with you guys. And I picked the ones that, you know, really gives you not a complete picture, but a sense of how things are doing in the economy. For example, artificial intelligence is fueling a cloud computing boom for tech companies. And Amazon is the latest to beat Wall Street expectations. Its cloud computing arm, AWS, grew 17% in the first quarter. And for the first time, it hit a $100 billion annual run rate. So Amazon Web Services is the largest provider of cloud computing services. And it is trying to keep up in the generative AI software race. Now, rivals like Microsoft and Alphabet, for example, also recently reported better than expected sales in their cloud computing units. And Microsoft's cloud computing revenue rose 31% from January to March, and Alphabet's rose 28% in the same period. So I also picked MasterCard earnings today. It's good news for the company, but perhaps not so much for the consumer, because US shoppers are tapping and swiping to make their payments more and more, meaning taking on more debt, right? So the strong credit card spending boosted MasterCard's first quarter profit. And despite rising borrowing costs and persistent inflation, transactions processed on MasterCard's platform rose 10% to $2.3 trillion. Now, spending on cards outside of the country it issued was almost double that. Wage growth and a tight labor market have ensured job security for card users, allowing them to spend more freely, it seems like. CVS Health has scaled back its 2024 forecast again this year, and as the healthcare giant struggles with rising costs from its Medicare Advantage business. So CVS Health's net income plunged 48% in the first quarter. Company leaders said they are particularly feeling pressure from outpatient care as well as inpatient care and supplemental benefits. Its CEO said the company was also dealing with a cyber attack on Change Healthcare, which processes claims. And speaking of that cyber attack on Change Healthcare, almost all US hospitals were hurt financially by that earlier this year. And this is according to a survey from the American Hospital Association. Change operates the country's largest payment management system for healthcare providers. 94% of hospitals reported damages to cash flow. More than half reported significant or serious financial damages since Change couldn't process claims. And actually, United Health CEO is testifying in congressional hearings today. He was also grilled by lawmakers on how the company is remedying the situation. NTD's Arlene Richards has a recap on that.
Mr. Witte owes Americans an explanation.
The CEO of United Health Group, Andrew Witte, grilled over the biggest healthcare hack in American history Wednesday. Hackers stole personal medical data from United Health subsidiary Change Healthcare. Change Healthcare processes billing and insurance for almost 6,000 hospitals and health systems. The hack forced Witte to shut down the entire system. This is putting financial pressure on such hospitals.
One health center reports spending $12,000 every week on overtime for staff who are dealing with the billing and eligibility issues.
Representative Catherine Masto says missing just two payments could shut down some of them. Some have stopped treating patients who likely had their personal data stolen.
Sensitive diagnoses, treatments, and medical histories that reveal everything from abortion to mental health disorders to diagnosis of cancer to sexually transmitted infections.
Senator Ron Wyden says we don't even know for sure exactly what was stolen, and we may never know, all because the company didn't have multi-factor authentication on any of its servers, nor did it duplicate critical components in its system called redundancy.
This company flunked both. Yeah.
Andrew Witte says he's trying to make it up to health providers by giving them interest-free loans.
I'm deeply, deeply sorry. We will provide this assistance for as long as it takes to get providers' claims and payments flowing at pre-incident levels.
Witte says these loans have no conditions except that health providers must pay it back 45 days after they return to normal. The Change Healthcare hack was discovered early February. Witte says he paid the hackers $22 million in ransom money and only got the stolen data back a month ago. He hopes health providers will be made whole in the next month. Arlene Richards, NTD News.
Well, another day, another student loan cancellation. President Joe Biden painting some debt relief for students who studied arts. He has approved $6.1 billion in relief for nearly 317,000 borrowers. Now, this applies to students who are enrolled at any Art Institute campus from January 2004 until October 2017. The Art Institute was a private for-profit system of art schools in the U.S., and the Department of Education found that the schools and its parent company made substantial misrepresentations to prospective students. So after a number of legal troubles, the Art Institute's closed last December. And for a deeper discussion into this topic, I spoke to Peter Earle, senior economist with the American Institute for Economic Research. Here's what he said. Pete, thank you so much for your time today. Appreciate it very much. So what I wanted to talk to you about today is Biden apparently approving another round of student loan cancellation, $6.1 billion. First thoughts, comments, initial reactions, good idea, bad idea, what do you think?
With respect to the specific decision to cancel the outstanding loans of the 300,000 students of the Art Institute, this is only the latest in a series of strategic redistributions by the administration. In this case, 300,000 people attended that chain of institutions between 2004 and 2017, and they're gonna see just over $6 billion worth of debt erased. You know, we should expect a lot more of this throughout the summer and early fall as the administration has expressed plans to, you know, cancel, you know, many, many more hundreds of billions of dollars worth of student loan debt. I think the number right now is up to 140 or 150. And it's really a thinly veiled attempt to purchase the votes of tens of millions of people. That's really all it is.
Are everyday Americans going to feel any impact with Biden approving these student loan cancellations?
Probably not immediately. You know, there's another thing too, and that is that in the specific case of the Art Institute, it was charged with misrepresenting the marketability of their degrees. That's something a lot of universities and academic programs could be justifiably accused of today. But the language that accompanied this latest debt relief effort by Biden was basically said that this is something that those debtors deserve. Now, if the Art Institute's actions and if its statements were actually legally fraudulent, any restitution should come from disgorgement, fines, the liquidation of its assets, not from a government order that essentially puts 150 million American taxpayers on the hook for just over a quarter of a million people.
Do you think Biden is actually going to complete his total goal for the cancellations somewhere around over $1 trillion?
I don't think so. I think he's going to do enough. I mean, I'm cynical enough to believe that I think he's going to do enough that will probably that he has a likelihood of moving the needle with these with this sort of student loan forgiveness in terms of the election results. But I do think that if he were to win a second term, it probably would be an ultimate goal to get rid of all student loan debt, maybe on a way to making all schooling free. But of course, there's nothing really free. You know, the trade-off there would be the quality of the schooling received or, the competitiveness of our workforce or that sort of thing.
Can you as well speak to where this money is coming from? Taxpayer dollars, a debt? Where is it coming from?
Yeah, I would say there's two major sources. The first is the tremendous amount of debt which the U.S. has taken on, now $34.5 trillion, with several trillion just taken in the last few years. And also, of course, the debasement of our money. And, you know, one of the reasons why debt forgiveness is so high on the list in terms of trying to woo voters is that, you know, we have this inflation, which for the last few months has been on the rise again. A lot of people who took on student loan debt were barely keeping their heads above water at low-paying careers that have little or nothing to do with what they studied. But now with this massive and broad rise in prices since early 2021, they're getting crushed. And that, even so, that still shouldn't be the responsibility of the 88% of us who don't have student loan debt.
I mean, just one final thing, I guess. Do you think this is a good use of the national debt here?
Absolutely not. In fact, historically, you know, national debt was accounted for by one thing, and that was basically going to war. And then after a war, we'd pay down some of that debt. But I mean, now you have basically a government that's trying to be all things to all people, and you have it taking on debt for everything from subsidizing certain industries to, you know, giving loans to industries or businesses that are ideologically aligned with the presidency, and now basically trying to socialize schooling. And the first measure towards that is eliminating the loans that people voluntarily took when they were told that basically everybody should have an education, that it's a rite of passage, and not only not that people should major in things which are marketable in the workplace. So no, it's definitely not the role of government. And you know, with this, government gets a little bigger, gets a little more powerful, and the beat goes on.
All right, very well spoken. Peter, thank you for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, just taking a short break now, but when we come back, why do most Americans say TikTok is a tool by Beijing to influence U.S. public discourse? Some even saying the app spies on everyday Americans. And the FBI is saying that more than $3 billion was stolen from elder Americans in 2023. We'll tell you some of the tactics being used by scammers so you can protect yourself. That and more exciting stories coming up after the break. And welcome back. Thanks for staying with me. Let me go through with you some rapid-fire headlines here to keep you as up-to-date as possible on what's happening today. To start off, former President Donald Trump is getting $1.8 billion richer. Trump Media Technology Group disclosed that he received another 36 million shares for the share price staying above a certain level. California's population grew last year by 67,000 people. This is the highest of any state, and this is the first growth since 2020. State officials attribute the rise to a drop in mortality rates, as well as fewer people leaving California and a rebound in foreign immigration. A slew of newspapers suing OpenAI and Microsoft. Those involved are the New York Daily News, the Chicago Tribune, and the Denver Post, claiming Microsoft is illegally using news articles in order to train their AI chatbots. And U.S. job openings fell to a three-year low in April. Data from the Labor Department shows unfilled positions were just under 8.5 million. And the number of people quitting their jobs also declined. All right. Some China-related stories here for you. A Reuters poll showed that nearly half of Americans agreed with the statement that China, using the app TikTok to spy on everyday Americans. And there was a lot more talked about in the poll. NTD's Sean Marshall has more.
Majority of Americans believe that China uses TikTok to shape U.S. public opinion. That's according to a Reuters poll conducted as Washington moves closer to potentially banning the Chinese-owned short video app. 58% of respondents to the poll agreed with the statement that the Chinese regime uses TikTok, which is owned by China's ByteDance, to influence American public opinion. Around 13% disagreed, and the rest were unsure or didn't answer the question. Abby, a fashion student that uses the app to share her clothing and art, wasn't so sure about the app's influence on U.S. public discourse.
I understand how somebody could kind of come to that conclusion. It seems a little far-fetched, I'm not going to lie. I personally, like, don't really believe it, but yeah.
The poll stated Republicans were more likely than Democrats to see China as using the app to affect U.S. opinions.
I think that TikTok has a political bent, which serves the purpose of the Chinese government, and in order to provoke provoke people in the United States. If you look at Chinese, the Chinese version of TikTok is completely unlike ours. It doesn't have the provocativeness. It doesn't have the insightfulness. It has more of an educational tool.
Amanda, who uses the app for leisure, believes a number of factors can affect how the app can influence people.
There's multiple variations of For You pages, so it depends on what side or what your algorithm is. So it depends on the algorithm. I think it depends on what content you get. So everyone's answer is probably different.
A study from the Center for Countering Digital Hate found that new TikTok accounts were shown self-harm and eating disorder content within minutes of scrolling. Suicide-related videos popped up within 2.6 minutes. Eating disorder content popped up in 8 minutes. Sean Marshall, NTD News.
Looking good, Sean, and thanks for that report. Moving on, a key component for electric vehicles could be hit with a higher tariff. So what I'm talking about here is North American miners. They're lobbying the U.S. government to impose a 25% tariff on some graphite products sourced from China. And this is so that they can better compete with producers from China. By the way, China accounts for 70% of global output of graphite. Miners' main customers, which are the OEMs, they oppose the higher tariffs. They argue that right now, without a credible supply chain in North America, they have been forced to depend on China, and higher tariffs will make them uncompetitive against Chinese automakers. The U.S. government is going to decide this month whether to slap higher tariffs on graphite. And new social media restrictions went into effect today in China, and let me tell you more about this. So the expanded state secrets law requires firms to take action if users post sensitive information. And the so-called network operators, they include Tencent, ByteDance, and Weibo. The law mandates that they monitor information being shared. It also details how posts should be removed, recorded, and reported. The revised rules broaden the definition of sensitive information and now it includes work secrets or information about the decision-making of state agencies. And the number of older Americans who are victims of fraud is on the rise. Americans over the age of 60 had roughly $3.5 billion stolen in fraudulent schemes last year. That's an 11% hike from 2022. And this is according to the FBI's Elder Fraud Report. So the report also says that the average older person scammed lost close to $34,000. But a few thousand victims each had $100,000 taken from their accounts. Federal officials saying that some of the scams used were people pretending to provide tech support for non-existent data branches, investments, or identity theft. Now, in a way to combat these scams, the FBI has set up a recovery asset team which can help freeze funds. All right, that's all the stories we have for you today. Thank you very much for watching. I really do appreciate it. And if you have any feedback for the show, please feel free to let me know. Email us at business@ntd.com or just leave a comment online. And don't forget, as I always say, business matters.